Let's go to the UK. Our correspondent today is Dan Bloom, who is deputy editor of Politico London Playbook. Welcome, Dan, and thank you very much for being with us.
Welcome, no problem. I almost didn't come on by accident. That's the clock difference for you.
This time of year,
change season.
This time of year is just fun and games. There are so many time zone changes across the world, but great to have you with us. And what is top of the headlines today? Yours anyway.
A row about political donors in the UK, so it seems. A couple of weeks ago, a businessman called Frank Hester gave an interview in which he kind of revealed that he'd become the biggest ever, we think, donor to the Conservative Party ahead of the election this year, giving £10 million. Now, the one problem with that is a fast forward a couple of weeks, and the Guardian newspaper, very prominent left-leaning paper, has revealed a whole load of comments, which it seems he made at a meeting in 2019, saying things which, on the face of it, look racist about Diane Abbott, a prominent MP in the UK, and other comments about sort of making jokes about Malaysian people and about how Indian people might sort of find room in the, at the meeting by clambering onto the roof of a train and that sort of thing. He said that, that this, you know, Diane Abbott made him want to hate all black women, if you forgive the language. So there has been a bit of a row over it, which turned into a very large row over it, because the party refused at first to say that these comments, which, you know, he says are taken out of context, but he's not denied making, were racist, and would sort of skipped around it. And there was quite a lot of outcry from black MPs and other MPs in the Conservative Party, to the point that the cabinet minister, Kemi Badenoch, sort of broke ranks and said, well, these comments were racist just on the face of it. And eventually on Tuesday evening, which is about 24 hours ago here, the prime minister came out and said, oh, they were racist after all. And part of the reason for that, of course, is because we have our weekly prime minister's questions on Wednesday. And Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, the leader of the opposition, brought this up in a very, you know, in a way that leaves no doubt that it is definitely an election year, and said that the party should be paying the money back. And that's where we are now. That the party has said that Frank Hester, this donor, has apologised for his comments, and therefore it seems that they're not going to pay the money back, because, you know, a person should be allowed to make a mistake and apologise. And you can bet that we'll be hearing a lot more from the Labour Party about that one.
It is quite a large donation, that. Is it, or is £10 million just the standard there?
It's not the standard here. So I don't know how things are in New Zealand, you know, how big political donations tend to get. But here we don't have the kind of mega money bag stuff that you tend to in, say, the US, where there is just, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars sloshing about politics. To compare, you know, it's in the low tens of millions, sort of between 10 and 20 maybe, for any given period, even though it's been higher than usual. So £10 million in that context is a lot of money to a political party from one person. There's no limit on, you know, there's no sort of cap on the amount that he can give if it's outside an election time, but things do all get registered, and so it sort of becomes quite obvious. And that's, it's a large amount of money by British standards. Yeah. I would say more than £1 million is a very large amount of
And they're not in a hurry to give it back. Now, what's the context for this new definition of extremism? Is this a legislative move? Could you explain?
So there's an announcement tomorrow, Thursday, here in the UK, about something. It's been worked up for nearly a year. The government has been looking at, you know, the issue of protesters who are perhaps marching in the street and are saying things that are very controversial, Islamist or far right or otherwise, but are not illegal. And at the moment, these things are sort of falling down a gap where the government really wants to do something about it and crack down on it. But these things are not illegal, so what could it do? So it seems that we're going to have a new definition of extremism, which was last updated in this country, I think, 13 years ago, come tomorrow. The details are sort of slightly under embargo, etc., but it's been very, very well briefed that it will basically change from a sort of general, slightly wishy-washy, an extremist is someone who goes against fundamental values, to more of a sort of targeted thing that can allow the authorities to basically root out groups that they think are extremist but are not breaking the law. And this is interesting because it will sort of deprive those groups of access to government ministers, of access to civil servants. They won't be allowed to come along to meetings. And probably the most important thing, they will be being called extremists by the government. The government will be standing up and saying, these people are extremists. And you can imagine the effect on, you know, say, a university or a council that was going to invite these people along, that they're going to think, well, if the government says they're extremists, I don't want anything to do with them. And the way it works is going to be interesting. It helps fill a gap in the way that these things are policed, but it also creates a sort of new category of people who are not breaking the law but who are being punished and suffering detriment from the government. So there have been some concerns, which the government denies, that it could inadvertently end up bringing in, say, gender critical feminists and other groups like that, because the definition could be sort of weaponized against them. And the proof will be in the pudding, really. We can't really know how this is going to work out until it's been up and running for a few months, by which time, of course, it's sometimes too late to put it back in the box.
Now, goodness me, another twist and turn when it comes to the Princess of Wales and the very latest, now following the photo, I don't know what we call it, incident, is what, Dan?
It's not something that's developed hugely. I don't know how much your readers have heard about this.
Oh, we all got very obsessed about the photo days. And which bits of it didn't look right and why it was such a drama. I know that Kate was seen afterwards both of the couple actually were seen afterwards in a vehicle with what was perceived to be, that's look, right, everything's fine. But you know, how's the palace sort of handling? Is it ignoring all this rampant speculation that's going on and just sort of pushing on, or what?
Well, I wouldn't say it's ignoring the speculation, because the thing that really kind of lit a fire under it was when it became so obvious that this picture had been edited in some way that they couldn't really deny it. And they put out a statement from the princess saying, like lots of people, I experiment with editing my photos. And the thing about that statement was that she had admitted that it was her editing the photo, rather than sort of blaming something else or a technical error of some kind, or, you know, putting it on staff or what have you. So that kind of answered that question, but opens up a whole load more questions. You know, what was it being edited for? And I think, I'm not a reporter who talks to the palace. I'm in the other palace, the Palace of Westminster, but it seems as though there's this kind of uneasy kind of line that everyone is treading in a different way along these sort of quite wild and rampant conspiracy theories about, you know, essentially what the palace says is recovery from surgery and her choosing to maintain her own privacy and not appear in public, and kind of you know, what we do know and what we do know for sure. And the problem is that this photo, as I'm sure your listeners have heard already, was sort of put out, people interpreted it as the photo being put out to put paid to these sort of wild conspiracy theories and say, look, here she is, she's fine, you know, stop making up about her. And then when you see that the photo is edited, it gives people sort of license to say pretty much, well, anything the palace tells us could be untrue. And so as a public relations thing, it's one of the biggest disasters that we've seen in a very long time.
I mean, just a bit of patience. If someone has had major abdominal surgery, many people would conclude what that may be, and it takes time to recover. But there's just no patience, yeah, it seems, to just leave her be.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, I sort of don't take a strong view on it, and not really a royal reporter, but it's that debate is playing out very, very fiercely on social media in the UK. It's pretty much all that anyone can talk about.
I was going to say, as things
it's
do.
Split between.
Yeah.
Sorry.
As things do play out on social media. Yeah. Thank you, Dan. I'm glad that you're happily disconnected from it all. What stage are you at just at the moment in the parliamentary cycle there, Dan? Is it sort of flat out at the moment with the House sitting and legislation being passed or what?
It's funny you should ask that question, really, because everyone here in Westminster is in a weird double life where it's like Schrodinger's election. So either we wait until November for an election and it only happens then, or there's a May election, which Downing Street has denied is going to happen, but not denied in a way that it can't come back from. You know, it is possible still for the government to hold an election in May, and the Labour Party is pushing this idea that it will be in May so that they can say the government's bottled it if they don't. And the thing about that is, because we have a countdown to an election, it will literally have to be announced next week if we have a May election. So all the journalists and MPs are kind of losing sleep at night thinking, oh God, there might be an election in just a few weeks' time. You know, it might be 2 weeks' time. I might be on the election trail, but then I probably won't. So Rishi Sunak is the master of suspense at that.
There's some cognitive dissonance going on by the sounds of it, Dan. Thank you very much, Dan Bloom, Deputy Editor of Politico London Playbook and our UK correspondent today.